Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I am John Arola, and I'm always excited to, you know, bring you the news every day. But you know what's particularly exciting? Having a new guest on the show. It happens so rarely, so I really like to savor it. We've got a special one for you. Joining us now, comedian, actor, podcaster, activist, probably a lot of other things too. Daniel Francese, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
How are you? I am a very happy multi-hyphenate. I'm glad to be here.
Very glad to have you here. We've been lucky enough to do a couple of specials together, but haven't done a full show. So very excited to have you here. I am going to go out on a limb and say that a lot of people in the audience probably already familiar with you. But for people who might not be familiar, either with you or don't care about your more podcasting and all that. You want to tell people a little bit about what you do?
Well, people also, I'm the CEO of Being Damien from the original Mean Girls. That's like my main vocation. Yeah, I also do stand up around the country and everything else. And I was Eddie Bear on HBO's Looking, which is now getting a whole resurgence thanks to this awesome like Murray Bartlett renaissance. And yeah, you can catch me on TV being a funny guy all the time. But I like to do a lot of artivism too. I like to try to infuse the underrepresented parts of myself into the work that I do and speak up, because I may not be the smartest person in the room, but I'm a pretty loud megaphone.
Mm-hmm. So. Don't sell yourself short in the brains department either. But anyway, we're going to use both the brain and the megaphone on our show. Those two things in mouths are really the only things you need to do with this stuff. So we're going to do the best that we can with it. And for those of you in the audience, we do have a lot to look forward to through the course of our show. We're going to be doing another dive into the current state of Ron DeSantis. There's some good news and some bad news, like legitimately bad news, but also not everything is looking as bad for Ron DeSantis as like the view from 1,000 miles up would imply. Doesn't mean he's going to be able to use this good news to his advantage, but we are going to talk about it. Should you punch down? Often it's frowned upon, but Donald Trump is going to make the case for it as a good thing to do. We've got Democrats being censured in the House. We have some people from a variety of different religions using claims of religious freedom to argue for access to abortion, kind of turning some of the laws that conservatives have passed over the last decade on their head. I find it to be fascinating. And we will be touching base with one of the big civil wars brewing on the right, Marjorie Greene, Lauren Boebert. Everybody knows that they fought yesterday. Nobody's surprised by that. But coming out of that fight, the two sides are, they're following very different strategies, and I find it to be fascinating. All that's in the first hour. In the aftermath, we also have news from around the world and meanwhile in. And will we have the world's first billionaire cage match? My fingers are crossed. We'll give you the details after this. But in advance of all that, please hit the like button and share the stream if you're on a platform that allows for that. And if you want to send any comments to either myself or to Daniel, you can do that. Super chats, tweets, all that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Daniel, are you ready to start the show?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Former Republican Governor Larry Hogan was not mincing his words when asked to evaluate Ron DeSantis's current performance in the Republican primary.
I think DeSantis has really underperformed. You know, he started out, and we've seen this happen before in other races, but he was the one getting all the attention. He was wall-to-wall coverage on Fox News. He was the only one other than Trump that was really getting a lot of attention. He raised a ton of money. He was a fairly successful governor in a big state who got reelected. And then he started making all kinds of mistakes. I think the campaign is one of the worst I've seen so far, and he's dropped like a rock.
Is it over for DeSantis?
I think it's getting close to being over. I mean, he just doesn't connect with people. He's not a good campaigner. He's not a good debater. He's a smart guy. Went to Yale and Harvard.
Doesn't lead with that.
Yeah, he doesn't lead with that.
He's not a good campaigner. He doesn't campaign well. He doesn't debate well. His scrambled eggs are runny. The dude smells terrible on a regular basis. Not a nice evaluation. And look, some people might say, well, Larry Hogan's a Republican, but he's probably just planning to run against him, so you can't really trust what he's saying. Well, no, he says he's ruling out a run for the Republican nomination this time around. And he doesn't seem to love Trump either. So you might think that he's inclined to be in favor of Ron DeSantis, but I don't know, maybe at least on this topic, he lives in the reality-based world. And Ron DeSantis really does seem to be underperforming, or not even underperforming, he's not even really performing. He's been running for president for like a month now, but he's running against Gavin Newsom more in California than he is against Donald Trump. And I got news for him, Gavin Newsom's not in the Republican primary. So it's just, it's a bunch of weird strategy and weird flip-flops and weird facial expressions. Daniel, this is the first time we're talking about this. What do you make of Ron DeSantis so far?
Well, Ron DeSantis, I think, is probably like the biggest hit to Italian since Chris Pratt played Mario on the Mario Brothers. Like, I'm so horrified that he's Italian. I think the whole Republican Party really right now, their strategy has been a lot of like schoolyard bullying and like yelling at each other and, you know, fighting. So it's not surprising that he's nose to nose with Newsom, who loves the term clean his clock, which I feel like he just recently has done. You know, some of Newsom's incredible stats about how most Floridians are moving to Florida, like, you know, things that are like being ignored by that. But, you know, being a person who's half the time a Floridian, I know the word on the street is DeSantis is losing favor. Like, a lot of the people who I saw were like hardcore Trumpers in the beginning on Facebook and doing all of these things, sort of supporting DeSantis in the beginning of his reign when he was doing things like fixing toll things. And making it less money when you go to work for using tolls, things that Floridians loved. Now it's kind of getting out of hand with the Don't Say Gay bill and a lot of this stuff with him wanting to remove woke culture, which really just means being aware of people and what's happening around them. You know, I think that Florida's a big state. And, you know, yeah, the farmers may have some more of the electoral votes, but I really think that they're not thinking about the people that live on the coastlines that are, you know, for the most part, pretty good humans, and I really not going to stand for some of his evil rhetoric.
Yeah, and I'm very glad that you brought that up too. We don't have time to dive into it, but maybe at some point on the show we will again. Ron DeSantis is this anti-woke crusader or whatever, but he wasn't always. Like, early on as governor, he tried to do, he pitched himself as, I'm a more moderate person, I do bipartisan stuff. And he kind of needed to do that because he got into office very narrowly. And so he was doing, like you're laying out, things that are designed to appeal to the right, but also to Democrats. And he was widely popular. Even a good number of Democrats liked him. And then with Trump, and especially into the pandemic, he appeared to discover, no, you know what, I can go all in on the right, culture war stuff. Then I don't have to do anything that risks the donors having an issue with it. It's all super easy stuff that doesn't challenge accumulated wealth or anything like that, the elite class. And he's really reinvented himself, so much so that it's easy to forget that there used to be other DeSantises. As Trump loves to point out, back in the day, he considered himself to be kind of like a Paul Ryan style Republican. And so he's just kept reinventing himself. Someday he'll choose one that isn't the worst. But anyway, Larry Hogan pointed out a good number of problems for Ron DeSantis, but we've got some new ones too. And once again, Ron DeSantis is sort of teeing himself up to look like a fraud. He sent out a fundraising email just yesterday accusing President Joe Biden of being an out of touch executive. So that might or might not be true. We can certainly have a debate about that. But it also came 1 hour after the Washington Post reported that he and his wife have flown on private jets funded by wealthy donors at least a dozen times. And that isn't necessarily the worst bit of news in the area of corruption that we're going to be covering. First of all, bear in mind that it's good that we have this information. Getting this sort of information in the future might be more difficult because remember, DeSantis has signed bills that have really shielded him from scrutiny. So information about past and future travels from journalists won't be able to find that, political opponents, people who visit the governor's mansion now being shielded. So a lot of legislation being passed specifically to advantage Ron DeSantis, but not quickly enough for him to have avoided us finding out that one of his donors supplied a golf simulator to his cabana. And look, no golf simulator seems cheap, but these in particular, very expensive. About golf simulators that require installation, like a team comes in and installs them, start at $27,500 and they can run up to and past $69,500. So these are very hoity-toity little toys indeed. And his donors are giving them. It would be one thing if he was blowing his money on it, but a donor to give you something worth like a Mercedes I don't know, if you're gonna continue to pitch yourself as some sort of like warrior against the elites, I think you're gonna have to do more than just insult Disney to overcome these sorts of stories.
What do you think? I also love the fact that he got married at Disney. Like, to me, you know, there's a lot of things about him that I think when you start to peel back the onion layers, it just, the onion looks rotten.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not actually a very big fan. You know, I was thinking about the Anita Bryant campaign, the Save the Children campaign in the 70s, and how Florida was such a huge crusader against basically don't say gay then. And it's so interesting how applicable that is to today's fight of what we're going through, especially with the trans community, how they've just used the same rhetoric for homophobia against transphobia. I think people don't want to stand for it. People want to educate their own children. They have family members who might be LGBTQ. They have family, you know, family members that might be people of color or are people of color themselves, and want their children to be educated. So the thing that we have now that 1977 didn't have is the internet. There's no way you're going to stop this new generation from learning and from finding out what the truth of the matter is and how people are treated unfairly. And I think that's his biggest opponent is the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that that sort of culture war still works for a lot of older people and some young people, but I do feel like it's a bad long-term strategy. I don't think that there's gonna be a huge amount of people that are working their way up through high school and college right now that are gonna feel like this is all that politics should be about, is trying to annihilate the LGBTQ community. But that's the gamble that they're making. I'm sure that, you know, if there was a caravan working its way up through Mexico, they'd talk about that instead. But in the absence of that, I mean, what are you gonna talk about? Like retirement and housing prices and health insurance and the cost of college? Nah, nobody's got time for that. But anyway, I implied at the outset of this show that we have good news and bad news. So we started with the bad news, but let's talk about the good news. Not everything looking so bad for Ron DeSantis. While Trump is heralding the new charges against him as good news, and certainly in terms of fundraising, that's the case. Trump has raised like $6 million. It does appear to at least temporarily have hurt him just a bit in national polls. So Trump is still leading. He's got 59% among Republican primary voters. DeSantis is down at 21. So let's not go crazy with the good news, but Trump's support is down 3 points. DeSantis is up 5 points. Nobody else really matters in this. Mike Pence has 6% or whatever. But that does indicate that things have shifted a little bit. And Trump's support among Republicans and Republican leading independents has dipped 6 points just since he was indicted. So that's in a CNN poll. So it does indicate that maybe it's getting through to a few people. But the issue is that there's no amount of charges, Daniel, against Trump that's going to give DeSantis charisma. Or a likable personality, or the ability. Oh,
there's zero likable personality. I was looking at all of the potential Republican candidates, and I was like, I hate them all. Like, it's literally like G.I. Joe and Cobra. Like, I'm like, you could just like, it's just all these evil people to choose from. Like, I think that, you know, really what people like about Trump is he's flashy, he's loud. You know, he's funny in a lot of ways sometimes when he's using some of his like punch down methods or something like that. And DeSantis doesn't have any of that charisma whatsoever. Like, I don't know how he's going to try to pull it off just being like this wet spaghetti mop.
Yeah, 100%. Look, people say that he's like trying to use his wife to make up for some of his charisma like lack. He needs to double down on that. He needs to have her debate for him. She should be running, actually. She should be running for president. That would probably be a better strategy. But here is the thing, the primary stuff, that's the important immediate stuff for Ron DeSantis. But here is kind of the funny stuff about what polling is showing right now. Ron DeSantis needs to get through Trump to have a chance against Biden. But were he to do that as of right now, it actually seems like that would be really good for the Republicans, because we've got some new, albeit not the biggest pollsters in the country, but some specific like a contested battleground state polling. And if you take a look at this, when you look at Pennsylvania, DeSantis versus Trump is a major difference. It's like a 6-point swing between those two candidates in the favor of DeSantis against Biden. Arizona is a, what is that, a 9-point swing? Georgia's a 6-point swing. These are all states that Joe Biden won in 2020 that he almost certainly needs to win in 2024. And it's really looking like if the Republicans want to have a chance of winning, they would be, at least as of right now, way better off if they chose Ron DeSantis. And that kind of thing can be lost in these national polls where Trump might be doing better nationally than Ron DeSantis, but that's not how elections are actually won. So I don't know, like I just imagine Trump seeing this and like stewing in it. But then also Ron DeSantis got to be pretty frustrated because that doesn't actually help him get to the point of running in the general.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really one of those things that time's going to tell. Like there's going to be either some big thing that pushes one of them forward or some big gaffe that is just going to, I hope they just cancel each other out at the end of the day.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that said, why don't we move to a little bit of fun? Whenever we're ready, we can jump into this video.
Many say don't punch down when talking about people like Chris Sununu or Sloppy Chris Christie or Ada Hutchinson. I call him Ada, not Asa, because of certain reasons. Or others. But sometimes it's necessary to talk badly about those that, for no reason other than politics, speak badly about you. Otherwise, the people that love you don't know whether or not they're for real. Are they saying the truth? They're not. So sometimes you have to punch down and you have to say what's happening. Otherwise, they won't understand. It's not fair to them. You have to put them in proper perspective, these bad people. You have to put them in their place.
There's a lot of weird Trump videos that we talk about. That was a weird one, Daniel. What do you think?
My brain is really still having a hard time wrapping around like what he's trying to say. Like, I guess he's like defending his abusive language towards other people, which is like, what else are you gonna do? You have to defend it or stop it. Like, so you've got to kind of stand behind it. But he's like, you need to tell people that it's okay to make fun of people, otherwise they don't know they love you. I'm like, what are you talking? Like, what? It's like, okay, Grandpa. I don't really understand like a lot of what he's trying to get across, but I don't think it's really professional. It's like the best word to say to be slamming your opponent so childishly when we're just trying to get facts out there. I prefer a stats, you know, over a roast. I don't know what else to call it.
Insults.
This mudslinging that he tries to do all the time. People seem to respond to it. That's what his core group of people like about him. They're the bullies on the playground. I feel like a lot of them anyway, at least the people from my high school who ended up being Trumpers are the ones that you're like, of course they are. You know, like it was those same people that were like, being bullies and like eating lizards on the football field, like just like doing crazy stuff that you're like, what are you doing? So I think this is another example of I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. It only just shows his character as a man and as a politician and as a world leader. Like if he's going to be slamming people and calling them weird names and stuff like that, I think that's just a big character flaw for me as far as how I would want my leader to be.
Yeah, his character, and also, in that many people love him, love what he's doing, will love that video. It reflects on their character as well. By the way, I just want to quickly say, so he says sloppy Chris Christie. Okay, we all get where he's going with that. It's super weird to me that when he's routinely mocking people for being overweight, the literally millions of Trump fans who are overweight seem to have no problem with that. But I've accepted it. They don't see that as a weird thing. Okay, that's fine. But Ada rather than Asa Hutchinson, I call him that for certain reasons. Could we pause for a second? What are the reasons?
Like transphobic kind of or whatever? I don't know what it is. It's just some weird kind of misogynistic, transphobic kind of messaging. I think it's
okay, so Ada is supposed to be like a girl's name. So he's calling this grown man a girl. That's what's going on?
Because the grown man approved trans legislation. So it's like his way of just sort of like mudslinging about, again, humanity? Did anyone think about including humanity in this at all? Like, aren't we supposed to be America? Like, isn't that what we're about? Or supposedly, I don't know, or what I was taught. I'm trying to figure it out myself because where we're headed is a scary place sometimes when these are, that's our former president.
Yeah.
It's a little bizarre.
Yeah. And look, and I'll end with saying his explanation, like there is a version of what he said that maybe makes sense, which is, look, I understand that like really like tearing a hole into someone who's at 2% might seem weird, but if they're telling specific lies, I need to point out those lies because otherwise they could just spread unchallenged. Like that's a rational way to explain what he's saying, but he's not pointing to specific lies. And the way that he talked about the obligation that he feels towards his audience is insanely patronizing and condescending. Like he was talking about the people that like him as if they were like dim-witted 5-year-olds. Like if I don't do it, they won't know it. If they love you, if they should, what are you talking about? Like he seems to have no respect for them. And I believe that that's an accurate reflection of the way that he thinks about those people. It's just added to the pile of things that if you were a Trump fan, this should deeply bother you, but for some reason doesn't. And I will just really fast, let me just say, Ron DeSantis needs to get a little bit of that. The ability for his massive faults to automatically be apologized for by his base. Trump has that better than anyone else in history.
I think that's what DeSantis is shooting for, especially with like some of his like slings and arrows against Gavin Newsom, like just trying so hard to get into the mudslinging game because it seems to be what the fan base wants. They all want to get up on the steel cage and go fight, 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 you know. And so I think he's trying to stir that up, but it's weak sauce. It's weak sauce. And it's got a lot of the energy of like when you ask your parents something and you really want the information, like because I said so. It's like it's got a lot of because I said so to it that I think is not enough maybe for this time around for Trump. I think some of his supporters are going to start to question that kind of behavior.
Yeah, I would love to believe that. I hope that there's evidence to that effect. Anyway, with that said, we do need to take the first break of our show. But everyone buckle up because we got a lot to get to. We'll see you on the other side of this. Yeah, just if you're listening to the podcast, you're not gonna know what we're talking about. But finish on the toilet and then make your TikTok. That's my general advice to everyone in all walks of life. Okay, with that said, we're gonna move on to other domestic news, starting with this.
Adam Schiff lied to the American people by leading the fake Russian witch hunt against President Trump. He weaponized the House Intelligence Committee to abuse all principles of due process and perpetuate the lies of Russia collusion.
So if you want to have an idea of the intellectual merit and substance to the efforts to censure Adam Schiff, you need only know that Marjorie Greene was a big vocal part of it. But this time it succeeded. The House has successfully censured Representative Adam Schiff. The vote passed on party line 213 to 209. All 5 Republican members of the House Ethics Panel who are going to be doing the further investigation, they voted present. It's probably a thing where that's implying that they'll be objective or whatever. But they also knew that the measure was going to pass either way. So anyway, it says that Schiff, quote, misled the American people and brought disrepute upon the House of Representatives for his handling of the Trump-Russia investigation. And it tells the Health Ethics Committee that you need to investigate him. Now, this is not exactly the same as the effort to censure him from a week or two ago. That, which was sponsored by Representative Ana Paulina Luna, also included a $16 million fine, and enough Republicans voted against that when they brought it back, they had to get rid of the fine. And it is not difficult to figure out why some Republicans were against that. Republicans are perfectly happy now that you can just censure people over BS. It used to be a very significant thing that was only taken, you know, as the last extreme. Now it's going to be casual. They don't mind that. But the idea that if they get into the minority, they could be fined for millions of dollars probably doesn't sit well with them. So that was a line that they did not want to cross. And by the way, this did tend to be a rare thing in the past. The last time it happened was in 2021. That was when Democrats reprimanded Paul Gosar for posting that video of him and Marjorie Greene murdering AOC and Joe Biden. So just to give you an idea of the different standards, They don't like the investigation that Schiff did, so he gets censured. They didn't think that Paul Gosar should be reprimanded for making a video of him murdering his political opponents. And only 25 House members have ever been censured. I don't know the content of all of them. I would imagine this ranks pretty low in terms of the substance behind it. But what do you think, Daniel?
I think that whenever the just a white person in general is using the term witch hunt, I always get like a little bit of like a ready a disdain for whatever they're going to speak to, because they don't have anything that relates to them like a lynch mob. Like they have to use that term, and I think it's always like some sort of red herring trying to get us away from what the actual thing at hand is here. And pretty much anything Marjorie Taylor Greene does gives me agita. So at this point. I mean, you just have to sit back and watch sometimes and just wonder if it'll sort itself out, because it's disheartening.
Yeah. By the way, I'm not saying that I think that everything that Schiff did was awesome, or that Schiff is beyond reproach. He'd never lie or exaggerate. I'm not saying that. I have no personal loyalty to Adam Schiff. But it just seems noteworthy that they're like, you know what, let's pause briefly from our never ending work to investigate Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and all that. And we're looking for any sort of conspiracy theory that we can to say, how dare you do something that we think was inaccurate in terms of an investigation. You guys are going full steam ahead against the Biden family. Like you're trying to get Hunter Biden's dick pics. Like seriously, you think that Adam Schiff is the problem here? It's all political. And the response also will be political. Let's first give Adam Schiff an opportunity to respond.
To my Republican colleagues who introduced this resolution, I thank you. You honor me with your enmity. You flatter me with this falsehood. You who are the authors of a big lie about the last election must condemn the truth tellers, and I stand proudly before you. Your words tell me that I have been effective in the defense of our democracy, and I am grateful. And yet this false and defamatory resolution comes at a considerable cost to the country and to the Congress.
Yeah, look, he's gonna be defensive. I don't think that he necessarily cares, in part because the Republicans have made it such an obviously partisan thing that I don't think that it stings the way that it used to. And we're in such partisan times that honestly, it might even help him. He's certainly acting as if he thinks that it will. He's fundraising off of it. He sent out nearly 20 fundraising emails that have mentioned the effort to censure him since Ana Paulina Luna first introduced her version back on May 24th. And he sent out tweets. You can see here in the lead up to this effort to do it. He likely will raise a bunch of money. Like there's a case to be made that them censuring him might help elevate him in his Senate race that he's in right now.
Isn't that politics though? It's like, that's, if you can't beat him, join him. Like, you know, just turn it into a positive. Razzle dazzle him, kid. Just throw a little glitter on it, honey. Like, what else are you gonna do?
And it might work. It might work. Okay, and honestly,
it just might.
What's that?
I said it just might.
It just might. And I don't know if they're necessarily thinking about that, but if they are. Well, look, they hate Adam Schiff, you know, performatively. He's critical of Trump. They don't like that. But would they, if it was up to the Republicans, would they have Adam Schiff versus one of the more progressive challengers for that Senate seat? That might not be as anti-Trump on a regular basis, but on economic policy would be more progressive. I feel like the Republicans don't necessarily mind the idea that this might give Schiff a boost. And plenty of people won't. Schiff is popular in California. That's why he's considered the front runner. But it's just interesting the way these things work out in the modern era. Anyway, with that said, why don't we move on to very different news. Talking about a progressive, actually. Representative Ayanna Pressley has introduced a new bill to expand access to abortion in terms of funding, travel expenses, those sorts of things. We want to give you all of that information. So the bill calls for coverage of accrued costs, including travel, lost wages, and boost federal spending in abortion training, research, outright, and doula care. So On the demand side, it helps people to get to places that have laws that are, you know, grounded in our century. Understanding also that those trips can be expensive, they can be time consuming. You might have to stay in a different state for a day or two. You might have to miss a day or more of work. And so those are costs that have now been put on people's backs thanks to these anti-abortion laws. And also expanding access to the training, those sorts of things makes it a little bit easier for providers to open up in these areas, perhaps near state borders, making the trips less expensive. And in announcing this, Representative Presley had this to say, "This week marks 1 year since the Supreme Court overturned the will of the people and obliterated the right to abortion care across our nation." And that is definitely the case. And a lot has happened by the way, since then. 14 states now outlaw abortion, 11 having bans without exceptions for rape or incest. Although I'm not gonna miss an opportunity to point out that even the states that do have those exceptions, that does not necessarily mean what they would have you believe. Having to convince a Republican judge or a Republican doctor or whatever that you should be a part of that exception is not an automatic thing. It can be time consuming, it can be highly embarrassing and stigmatizing. And lots of doctors are terrified of running afoul of the law, so they won't necessarily provide the care even if technically the exceptions exist. And all of this, by the way, without the Republicans ever once having gotten the country on their side on this issue. It was overturned with the majority of people believing that abortion access should be maintained. And even in some red states where they've tried to do ballot measures, like in Kansas, they have lost. And so I know it's such a weird disconnect, Daniel, from public opinion and what some of these state legislatures in the most red states are doing. But it is good to see some politicians not forgetting about this issue a year out. What do you think?
I definitely think it's really important that politicians don't forget about it. This is something that I think is pertinent to our country. To, you know, a lot of people need abortion services for whatever reason, and I personally think that people should have that choice. And so it's nice to see that there are some politicians that are not letting it slide. You know, even though it's now a bigger battle, being a national battle too, you know, but making it more accessible and making it legal for people, I think is only a good thing. I hope that more people can follow this kind of an example and try to help rectify this horrible injustice that's happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we should bear in mind that she's in the House, Democrats are in the minority, so basically no chance of it passing, and nothing can get done in the Senate, so unlikely that would pass either. Still,
I still think it's important historically that these things are going on record, that people were like opposing it, that there is an opponent of it. I mean, I think it only inspires more people to try to find ways to rectify this.
I agree. Well, let's move to a sort of related issue. Generally, when you hear about the topic of religion, when it comes to abortion rights, it's usually religious conservatives saying that it should be outlawed, either not connecting it to their religion, but it's influencing it, or some directly saying that these are violations of their religious rights. Now, I'm not going to re-adjudicate what the Bible actually says about abortion, but it's fascinating stuff and you should read up on it. But we've actually got sort of an inversion of that. We have some religious people of a variety of different religions saying that bans on abortion actually violate their religious rights, which I think is fascinating. So we've got a lawsuit in Missouri that is saying that elevating a particular Christian denomination's view on abortion blurs the line between church and state. And they specifically are saying that there's this coalition between not just Christians of other denominations, but also Jewish individuals, some Satanists as well, that are coming together on this. And so I love to see them working together. You also have in Indiana, a number of different religious individuals and organizations are suing over the state's near total abortion ban. The interesting thing there is they say that it violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was signed into law back in 2015 by then Governor Mike Pence. So obviously the law was signed by Mike Pence, supported by conservative Christians for very different reasons. They were not looking to enshrine access to abortion care. But it is interesting that they could have set a precedent where that might be able to work. Daniel, I have no idea if these or other lawsuits of this type will be successful, but I do like that they are sort of flipping how we normally think of religious activists in this area. What do you make of it? I know you do a podcast about religion.
Yeah, I have a podcast called Yash Jesus, which is look at religion through the LGBTQ lens. I do think that Mike Pence historically in his state made a lot of things that were religious based decisions that caused a lot of chaos, including a gigantic HIV outbreak and a bunch of other things during his term there. I feel like it's important to listen to everybody. The whole thing is we have to coexist. America is a melting pot, and a lot of these so-called Christians, on our show we call them Christians with a hard R, like Christians, these Christians with a hard R, and the hard R is Republican usually. Want to speak for all of us, and they're speaking on a level of hate. I mean, even with the LA Dodgers fiasco with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, an amazing community service organization where, yes, they dress as like kind of clownish nuns, but they have done so much community service, saved so many lives and so many things in their community, were being honored by the Dodgers. And then there was this huge uproar by the Catholic Church saying that they mock nuns, and they had like thousands of people show up at the Dodger Stadium in protest. When was the last time you saw thousands of Catholics like protesting clergy people who are accused of molesting children, or so many other instances where child hunger or homelessness or any other kind of thing that's actually helping or saving children? A lot of this stuff is politicized, and a lot of these churches and organizations own a lot of real estate. I think the Catholic Church is the number one real estate holder in the world. It's kind of like if they were not tax exempt, they could solve world hunger. So I think a lot of the times, if they were really trying to do things that were helping the community, then I could see these arguments being valid. But a lot of times they are just politicized arguments that are just used again for fundraising and partnerships with their ally politicians, who are also against a lot of important things that could actually help children.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that you're totally right to point out that hypocrisy. I've always felt, like I repeatedly say on the show, like even just cynically for pragmatism, you would think that some of these people that hold up their religious identification as, you know, why they're doing things like trying to outlaw like abortion, those sorts of things, why wouldn't you also just do a little bit of stuff to like help kids that are like 3-year-olds or whatever, like get access to food, or, you know, why not do that sort of stuff? Even if just in a cynical attempt to like burnish your credentials, why wouldn't you do that? But very often, no, it's like you say, it's protesting against, you know, this organization or whatever. It's so like hostile rather than just helpful. And I don't understand.
It's a complete enigma to me. The same hard R Christians that are praying for all these unwanted children in the world are then voting against gay adoption. It's like, okay, like who are you actually trying to save? What are you actually trying to do? I think a lot of the problem with it is those religions, they rely too much on their religious leaders than actually talking to God themselves. I think a lot of them just listen to these people who are in charge of these mega churches and in charge of, and the Vatican, who lay down a lot of rules and say, don't question it, this is how it is. And they're stuck in that, and they think they're honoring God by doing that. But I think if they truly read the Bible and truly were practicing in their religion, that they would have a little bit more heart and humanity.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna see how these state level challenges play out. There's so many cases that are working their way up through a number of different states. This is like one subset of it. We will see if this strategy is more successful in winning over some of the the conservative Christian members of the SCOTUS. I have a feeling that they will figure out a way around this, maintaining religious freedoms where it's advantageous to the most common religion in the country, and probably figure out a way not to have to listen to them. But we'll see. We'll be tracking it. For now, though, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, lots more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. Okay, everybody, Jasper Katz is saying apparently a piece of the sub was found. Yeah, I hadn't seen that. Thank you for the update. I wonder if they'd be able to confirm it so immediately that that's actually what it's from. But, and also why, if the sub had failed, I had been led to believe that it would, that the pieces would not resurface. But anyway, we're all finding out a lot about submersibles this week, a tragedy regardless. With that said, let's jump into our last two topics to close out this first hour of the show. Members of a sorority in Wyoming, Kappa Kappa Gamma specifically, are suing over the fact that the University of Wyoming chapter admitted transgender women, or one woman specifically, to the sorority, and they're not happy about it. But a court is saying that they are not going to interfere with the admittance policy of the sorority. That does not mean these sorts of challenges are done, but it is fascinating that in this case, they have ruled in favor, not technically of the transgender woman, but of the sorority to decide what its policies for admittance are. There's a few interesting wrinkles to this case though that I think that we should dive into. So first of all, originally, six of the seven women had multiple times been barred from doing this lawsuit because they wanted to do it anonymously. They were stopped from doing that and finally decided, okay, I guess we'll do it with our names attached to it. And I think that there's some place in the law for anonymous lawsuits, but I feel like for this sort of thing, I feel like you should be willing to put your name and your face to it. If you are saying that a person should be banned, what do you think, Daniel? Immediately,
it's definitely giving like a bunch of us have talked, and I'm not gonna name any names, but we just don't like want you in our sorority anymore. Like, it's giving that energy.
Look. Sorry, continue.
No, if you're gonna have some sort of strong opinion on something, I say be strong about your opinion. Like, you know, trying to do something like I'm gonna put it in the suggestion box just isn't gonna cut it when you're talking about altering somebody's life plans.
Yeah. Now look, I don't know these individuals. I don't know the apparently unnamed transgender woman that they're trying to ban from it. They say Artemis Langford is the transgender woman, apologies. They say that Artemis's presence made some members of the sorority uncomfortable. Langford would sit on a couch for hours while quote staring at them without talking. If that claim is true, then I can understand how that would make you uncomfortable. Why that would mean that all transgender people should be banned from being a part of the sorority seems like that's going a bit far.
Also, like if that's the case, when you were pledging, didn't you notice some sort of like maybe personality flaws? Like, I kind of feel like that's, isn't that the time to like feel out your sisters or like your frat brothers and like see if they fit in with your group? Like if Artemis was inducted into the sorority and they said, hey, come be our sorority sister. You've got the vibes, you did whatever the rush stuff was, you've met all the requirements. And then there's like a group of people who are sitting there going, she's staring at us. Like, well, you know, like, are you engaging? Like, you know, like, is this, there's a lot of questions that just that comment alone brings up to me. Oh, she was sitting on the couch and staring at us. It sounds exactly like something that somebody that was mean girling somebody would say about somebody who was being afraid to like engage with somebody that was staring at them.
Yeah, maybe Artemis didn't feel comfortable talking because maybe you all were staring at Artemis. We don't know. We honestly don't know. And that at the end of the day is not even what the judge's decision sort of hinges on. But here is some excerpts from the motion to dismiss that I do think are interesting. The central issue of this case is simple. Do the plaintiffs have a legal right to be in a sorority that excludes transgender women? They do not. This policy, by the way, has been around since 2015, which I'm actually surprised by, you know. And I also do have to remind myself that while you know, huge sections of the country have never been particularly inviting or welcoming to members of the LGBTQ community, the time that we're in now is particularly aggressive. Like, I don't feel like against transgender people specifically, there was tons of ignorance and probably tons of stigma, you know, from many people, but it wasn't like a constant topic of conversation on the right on a day-to-day basis constantly. And so it's hard to forget that there were places where they were just more inviting, more welcoming back in 2015 than they are right now.
Somebody said something like, do you remember those 6 or 7 years where it was okay to be LGBTQ? Like, there was like a little sweet spot where like everything was like chill for like a minute. And those chill days are over. They found a hot button topic now. Like, this is something that they found that is rebel-rousing their group to say, yeah, we agree with you, and probably gaslighting us from more important issues like gun control even. But yeah. I feel like it is a hot-button topic of this election, whether we like it or not. And I think that I think this is one of those ones where you really want to be on the right side of history. Like, time is only going to make you look foolish if you're, you know, following this awful plan to sort of eradicate transgender folks, like especially when there's the calls coming from inside the house and it's one of our own, and it's like gay people who don't want the T to be part of the LGBT. But sorry, there is no LGBT without the T. You know, until our most marginalized members of the LGBTQ community are free and comfortable being who they are walking down the street, none of us are free.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, look, if you disagree, you can say that. But also, we can point out that, like, it is very convenient for the right to have some individuals or organizations that they can hide behind to say, no, it's not about hating people or whatever. Look, even some gay organizations also think that there should be no rights whatsoever. Like, the right is always going to jump on the opportunity to have that.
They immediately jump towards children. They say, oh, we don't want you to change our children and give them hormone blockers or blah, blah, blah. You know, we're not trying to make trans children. We're trying to make trans children stay alive.
Yeah.
There's a difference. We're not trying to create anyone. We're trying to create a safe space for people. So I think that a lot of people who don't know a transgender person, or it's the same thing with queer people, or gay people rather, in probably the 70s and 80s. If you didn't know one, you might have judged them based on what the media was saying during the AIDS crisis about gay people. And that's what we're dealing right now. This is literally a crisis for transgender folks.
100%. Yeah. Transgender kids exist whether you like it or not. I wish that was a truth that could be accepted by some people, but they are certainly resistant.
And that's on what? Period. And God. Like.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Take it up with the creator of everything.
Yes. Okay. And I love that word creator. That's what Pete Buttigieg said about Mike Pence saying something about. And creator is a buzzword. People who actually believe in God, like when you use words like creator, they're like, it makes them listen. And I think that is exactly it. God doesn't make no mistakes. Transgender folks are fearfully and wonderfully made, and every hair on their head is counted.
Yeah. 100%. You know what? We're gonna play this last video actually, because I want to give more time to our e-blocks. We're gonna wait. We're gonna throw that to the aftermath. So everybody, definitely stick around if you're listening to the podcast. There's extra clips that come out every day on our YouTube channel. You should definitely go check it out. But for now, there are some who are not satisfied to just have a debate about whether transgender women should be allowed in sororities. They think that this is something beyond just what a person wants. This is a conspiracy. Take a look at this.
What about the angle of the Wyoming Democrats? Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder whether this was like an inside job, like, hey, let's get in here.
Position this transgender person and
push the transgender narrative, their agenda into this sorority, expand the transgender agenda at that campus, but to your point, around the country as well, because mm-hmm. you just keep going piece by piece, eventually try to get this to the Supreme Court. It just looks very mm-hmm. political and strangely political. Coincidental that this man, because that's what he is actually working for the Wyoming Democrats.
See, it's very convenient that this person wants to be in a sorority. You know that, like, it becomes political when judges have to start weighing in on it. And they did that when people tried to ban Artemis from being there, not when Artemis got into the sorority. You guys made it a political thing. If you just shut up, then you just have a person in a sorority, and that would be that. My assumption would be, and obviously I don't speak for Artemis, I don't speak for anybody, but I assume that the agenda is being in the sorority. I think that that's the end goal. That's the end game of this thing, is just being a sorority girl, I think.
Or the greater agenda at large, staying alive and just being able to live a normal life. I'm working on this project, Prayers from a Drag Queen. It seems that everything that the hard R Christians have to say about us, there's never a prayer. Like, it's always just some condemning us or standing outside with some hateful sign outside of an event. But a lot of the prayers, I ask people, what's queer joy, or what do you think that the LGBTQ community needs? And a great deal of people answer the same thing. And they said, just to be able to walk down the street, listen to music, hold my partner's hand, and be myself.
Yeah.
The big wish, the big prayer for the LGBTQ community right now is just to be able to breathe and be at ease.
100%, and it shouldn't be too much to ask. Okay, that's the end of the first hour, everyone. Thank you for watching. More to come in the aftermath. Don't go anywhere.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.